On the line now, I have Rory McKiernan. Good morning, Rory.
Good morning, John. How you doing?
I'm doing great. And yourself? We're living in strange times.
Strange is the word for it. It's probably the word of the year, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And 2020 will go down in history. I don't know about what we'll be remembering for a long time to come. Now, Rory, we're going to talk about your new book, Hitching for Hope, A Journey into the Heart and Soul of Ireland. But before we get to that, do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about yourself? Some of them might remember you.
Well, I'm originally from a place called Clute Hill in County Cavan, although the accent has diminished, but I'll probably get it back again for the football, brushed up. And my mother's from Donegal, went to college in Scotland, travelled around the world, came back to Ireland and decided I wanted to do something to contribute to the community or be part of the community, and got myself a job with the Northwestern Health Board, and a woman there by the name of Janet Gaynor mentored me and supported me to, I suppose, develop skills and experience around youth health promotion, and then that gave me the confidence later on to go off and set up a non-profit organisation that's called spunout.ie. And basically that became a national website and platform for young people for information, support, ideas. And that's going now over 15 years now and going strong. I left it a number of years ago. Like many founders, I kind of overworked and burnt myself out.
Yeah.
And it was just time for something different as well. So since then, in the subsequent years, I've helped start a number of different organizations and groups, and I basically get involved in different social and community and youth projects and campaigns around Ireland and abroad. And I suppose social justice would be one of the themes, but it's really about people finding their voice and finding their power. So different projects on the go at any one time. I have a podcast and obviously the book came out this year. And I'm always just looking for ideas to get stuck in and try and, you know, play my part where I can. But obviously there's a lot of benefit and joy for me in it all as well.
Yeah, and I've a list here in front of me, a list of funding opportunities and deadlines that you've put together, and it's some list. But do you want to tell us a little bit about your book? It's your first book, so congratulations on that. And did you find out through this lockdown, creative people, they find themselves, they have time, and also all the different emotions that you're going through helps with the creativity?
Yeah, well, look, talking to people about it all, I found that people have had mixed experiences. I don't think there's any one universal lockdown experience. Some people have had a terrible time in general, their physical or mental well-being. Some people have actually done very well and have enjoyed the time, more time with family, less time commuting, all of that. So it is a mixed bag, there's no doubt. And then the same with some of the kind of creative folk. Some of them just that I've spoken to have really struggled to get anything down, whether it be songwriting or guitar or writing or whatever it might be. And others have thrived. And personally speaking, I have to be honest and say I've done really well out of it. I'm not talking about financially necessarily. I'm just talking about in terms of creative output. I launched a new podcast. I'm living in Clare these days, County Clare, and called the podcast Creative Souls of Clare, and I've started a series of interviews and conversations with songwriters, musicians, actors, poets, anyone doing anything creative in Clare. And I've also managed to do a lot of writing during the lockdown as well. So, I suppose part of that is just managing my own mental health and well-being. I've been jumping in the sea as well and just finding ways not to be overly consumed by the news or worry or fear or a lot of the negativity that's in the world these days, you know, because I'm also finding that there's a lot of goodness in the world.
Communities have come to the fore in helping each other and that's great to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's why we are where we are. It's not, you know, in terms of coming out of the lockdown, and there's a little bit of hope on the horizon, you know. I know we're far from out of the water, but I think, you know, it's a testament to the power of community spirits, power of individuals, power of families and communities sticking by each other and looking out for each other. And specifically and most importantly, caring for our most vulnerable, you know. I'm thinking of, you know, people with disabilities or older people or people with underlying health conditions. A lot of our sacrifice and work has been for them. Obviously, we're all in it and minding ourselves as well, and that's important. But I think it's about the collective, and any good, healthy, strong, vibrant, caring community looks out for everybody in the community. And that's the kind of Ireland that I want to be part of, and that's the kind of Ireland I celebrate. So while there are a lot of challenges and injustices in the country that remain, I think there's a lot to celebrate as well.
Yeah, so the book, Hitching for Hope, A Journey into the Heart and Soul of Ireland. Just tell us a little bit about it. I believe it was a number one bestseller.
So John, this book, it was never meant to be a book in the first place. It sort of happened by accident, but it started after I left that organisation I founded, Spun Out. I was kind of burnt out, and the Celtic Tiger had collapsed. I was struggling in terms of my own, I suppose, energy levels and enthusiasm, and I was probably a bit kind of, I don't know if I was depressed, but I was definitely, you know, not in the best form. Yeah. And I was actually living in the north side of Dublin there at the time, and did a course with Near FM at the time as well, so very familiar with Near FM. And I suppose I was looking for hope and looking for inspiration in my own life, but also for Ireland. It was unclear. It was unclear what the future held for the country at the time, in the same way maybe it does at the moment as well. It's a time of great uncertainty. And I just decided I'd go around the country and chat to people. And in Australian Aboriginal Indigenous culture, they have a term called the walkabout, where you just take off, you know. And I suppose I took off just asking questions, and I called it the Hitching for Hope listening tour. And I decided to do it through hitchhiking. And hitchhiking, something that I grew up with, it's a way of meeting people outside of my comfort zone. You never knew who you were going to meet or where you'd end up. And that's the way I went around Ireland and ultimately found this Ireland of kindness and caring and people looking out for me and, you know, just bringing me, make me dinner and putting me up. And, you know, like some people have jokes in, it's like a great holiday. And it was in lots of ways. And I created blogs about it, and I went on the radio and I talked about it. And a lot of people asked me about it for a long time after, because they felt it tapped into something. And they said, you should put that down in a book. And I suppose I tried and I tried and I failed and I failed, and then I tried again. And it took me a few years to really get it over the line. And then eventually I got it over the line. And then when did it launch? But March 26th, what was happening that week? First lockdown, all the shops yeah. closed and bookshops closed and launches cancelled. So talk about a week to be launching a book about hope. So what could you do but laugh? Because if you didn't laugh, you'd cry, you know. Yeah. And you just keep pushing on. And thankfully, the book became a bestseller, and it continued to do well.
Yeah, that's great. And you're involved in a lot of other things as well, Rory. Like, for instance, podcasts. You do podcasts. The Love and Courage podcast, for instance.
Yeah, I have this other one called the Love and Courage podcast. And I interview all sorts of people. I suppose people that I feel would exemplify and embody that kind of value of love and courage in the world. And my last episode is with Father Peter McVerry, who's, you know, he needs no introduction, but so many people commenting on my Facebook saying he's a living saint. Now, I know immediately that he doesn't want any kind of adulation or praise, but he's a man very much for over 50 years has been walking his talk. And for people that maybe identify as Catholic or Christian, he seems to me that he's the living example of that. You know, he's doing what needs to be done and standing in solidarity with the poor, the marginalised and the oppressed. And I feel strongly about that myself, that, you know, for all the money and wealth in this country, and there still is an awful lot of it, it's absolutely shocking, devastating and simply unacceptable, the fact that we have people dying on our streets and sleeping on our streets. And not just that, people, family, children in hubs and direct provision. And there's just needless suffering in the country because of, essentially you could say, greed and a lack of empathy and care and compassion. So I think Father Peter McVerry exemplifies the conscience that we need to remind ourselves of. And I've lots of other guests, like I've Christy Moore and Francis Black and Lynn Rowan. Luca Bloom and people from around the world. So it's great. Great thing that I enjoy it anyway. Yeah, and there's listeners around the world. It's 1 hour conversations and chats.
Yeah, it is, and you were talking about homelessness there, and it's heartbreaking to see what's going on. I talk a lot to inner city helping homeless, and it always comes up volunteers. There are people out there and are volunteering, like inner city helping homeless. They're all volunteers, and they go out at night and they feed homeless and look after the homeless. And if they find a family, they'll try and find somewhere for them to stay the night, and. Volunteers, I have huge admiration for them.
Yeah, unbelievable. In every walk of life, in every community, the length and breadth of the country, it's volunteerism that is the glue that keeps the society together. You know, if it wasn't for the likes of inner city helping homeless, the whole variety of homelessness groups, people working in different campaigns, causes, sports, youth work, direct provision, you name it, it's people that are, you know, making time out of their day to remember to look out for other people. And it doesn't have to be through an organisation either. We can do it just with our neighbours or friends or family. I think it's such an important thing to do, is to make time for others. And the beauty of it is that, in my experience anyway, is that you get more than you gain. It's not why you do it, of course. But the reality is, you learn things, you learn new skills, you make new friends, you hear stories, and it's a privilege ultimately. But I also want to say that it's a sad thing that we have to rely so much on volunteers because of the ineptitude and inadequacy of the Irish state, because it isn't simply strong enough. The public services aren't strong enough. And I think that's why we have to be political, and we have to raise our voices and demand that we have those services, that there will always be need for volunteers, but it shouldn't be at the level it is now.
Yeah, and just to mention volunteers again, I talk to a lot of organisations, include Inner City Helping Homes being one of them, and Childline and Women's Aid. And as you say, it's terrible that we have to rely on people giving up their own time free of charge to help people in need. Now, you're also, you like to highlight the movement to end Ireland's direct provision. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I suppose direct provision was started 20 years ago as a temporary system to accommodate asylum seekers that were applying for refugee status. And the idea is that they would be processed in an effective and an efficient manner. Ireland has signed up to various international protocols that basically is the same equivalent of what I was talking about, where we do our a little bit to help others in need, and in this context from people fleeing poverty, war, persecution and so on. And they would be deemed to either be a refugee or not. And direct provision was the system that was designed to be temporary. And unfortunately, it's become our latest kind of version of the Magdalen Laundries, where there are institutional centres where several thousand people are, many instances, hidden away into substandard, shoddy accommodation, into cramped conditions where there have been massive COVID outbreaks, there have been suicides, there's massive mental health problems. People living in limbo for 5 years or more, sometimes not knowing what their future holds, and sort of massive distress and human rights issues, often amongst the population that have already suffered a lot. So there has been a lot of misinformation and fear-mongering around the direct provision system. I think it's generally agreed now that it needs urgent reform. There seems to be an acceptance of government that that's going to happen, but we can never be sure of anything until it actually does happen. So I, for one, just feel that we need to keep highlighting it, and we also need to remember just to keep that element of compassion in our hearts. That I often hear the term "look after our own first," and that's understandable at one level, that you know, you look after your family, your friends, your neighbours, your community, but also we're all part of a global family. You know, we're all part of a world that we benefit from economically, socially, and culturally. And the Irish nation, the Irish people, have sent millions abroad through poverty and war and hunger, and seeking better opportunities. So I think we can do a little bit, a small bit, proportionate bit in our country to help others in need as well.
Yeah, and we have the movement of asylum seekers in Ireland, and I'd imagine you support that movement.
Yeah, that's right. It's a group called MASI. Their website is masi.ie. And that's made up of asylum seekers and refugees, and it's their voices, their testimonies. And I think there's a saying that goes on in the campaign and movements of different varieties where it goes, nothing about us without us. And I think that's important to remember if we're talking about homelessness or refugees or the disabled or any other different population group, sorry, I should say people with disabilities, that their voices have to be front and central in making decisions and hearing their testimonies and experiences, and that we take their lead on the matters because they're the ones with the lived experience.
Okay, Rory, unfortunately we're running out of time. Is there anything you'd like to add that we've missed?
Not really. You know, I just want to send a lot of love to anyone that might be listening that's struggling at the moment, because I know there's a lot of lonely people right now and a lot of people kind of waiting for this time to be over. But I just want to, you know, remind them that good times lie ahead and that there's always goodness in the day. And I suppose one of the things that's got me through is to just practice a little bit of gratitude and be thankful for the food in your stomach and the roof over your head if you have one, and the simple things in life, you know, and the fact that we don't live in war zones and there is a lot of goodness in the country despite the challenges. So, you know, just I don't know if it's too early or not to say Happy Christmas, but just to wish everyone well and good health and happiness. And you know, I'll send you in a copy of the book there as well if you want to send one out to listeners. Hitching for Hope, if anyone wants to check it out.
That'd be great. Well, listen, Rory, it's been great talking to you, and thanks very much for taking the call. And we will say to everybody out there that we will come out of this crazy time, and we'll hopefully have learned from it and learned to appreciate what we have.
We will indeed. We shall overcome, as they say.
Yeah.
Good man, John. Definitely. Thank you.
Thank you, Rory. Thanks very much.